Where's Fielder?
He's gone to the dogs.
Howdy, folks, and welcome to the Gone to the Dogs podcast. This is your home for dog talk at its finest, and it's going to be at its finest today. I am your host, co-host, Corey Groover, and I am here with our very special guest today, a man of many breeds and many talents, Mark Miller, and everyone's favorite Coonhound Talk host, Steve Fielder.
I'd rather be in second. You should have put me ahead of Mark. the marquee. I'll have my people call your people, and we'll work that out for next time.
There you go. But welcome, hey, Mark.
Yeah. Welcome to the show, bro.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah.
Been a while since I've been on.
It has. Mark lives on a hill, up on a beautiful panoramic, I don't know what you say, a vista. That's what the real estate people in the mountains call. This cabin has a great vista, great views. Well, Mark, he lives on a mountaintop. It's not in Tennessee. It's in North Carolina, up on the hill. And I've sat right there on Mark's front porch, and we did a podcast one time, as I remember, didn't we, Mark?
Yes, sir. Yeah. A good one. I would be sitting there now, but the sun up there blinded me. I had to move to the backside.
Well, that sun's a good thing. We make millions and billions of dollars down here in Florida on that sunshine. So
that's right.
That's right. Well, Corey, how's your week going?
We're working through it. It's gone to the dogs, so to speak, but we're working on improving it every day. So what we're doing here today is, recently, as many of you have probably seen on Facebook, Steve and Mark shamelessly have posted about the success of a particular little dog that they have in partnership with one another, and that dog's name is Bear Pen Fever. Everybody knows Fever. So Fever, just this past weekend, finished his UKC Grand Knight Champion title, and that's what we're here to talk about today. We're here to talk about the journey for this little dog going from zero to grand. And we're gonna pick Mark's brain about some of the specifics about this dog and about the logistics that went into finishing this dog out. And then obviously we're gonna get some wise words of wisdom from Steve about what you can do to make your dog a Grand Knight champion, or if you can even afford it. There's not gonna be a single stone that's not overturned in this episode as far as it goes to finishing dogs in a competitive event. So I'm going to let Steve kind of take over from here, and we'll get going.
Well, Corey, I want you to drive this ship tonight for sure, because I know most of this story. Mark has been great to keep me in the loop as he and Fever have been into all kinds of things. Up to this point, we counted up the other day, I think, Saturday night, the dog was 2 years, 5 months, and how many days did I say, Mark? I don't remember exactly, 14 or something like that.
14
days. Yeah, and there's been a lot of miles covered and a lot of long nights and hot nights and cold nights and everything in between. I'd like to right up front, post a little disclaimer here. The reason that we're doing this podcast, besides just letting Mark crow a little, because when you accomplish something like he's accomplished, there's certainly bragging rights that come with it. And we want him to feel free to express himself. But the other thing is, I want to be very clear that people that are listening to this understand that this is not an ad for this dog, a stud ad or a means for us to try to promote this dog. The reason that we're doing this podcast is to give information, encouragement, hopefully some inspiration to people out there that have a nice, bright prospect. And, you know, as you look down that long road, as Mark and I have, and of course, Mark's been down that road, and I have many years ago, you know, it looks like almost an insurmountable goal at times, you know. It really does. It's like the old thing, if, you know, can God make a rock that's too heavy for him to lift? And, you know, and sometimes this goal in the coonhound world, I'm old school, and I think Mark is to a degree as well. And Corey, I've called you an old soul with progressive ways. And but, you know, Grand Knight Champion has been the holy grail of the coon hunter for the competition dog for many, many years. And so I hope we'll get in our discussion today about what it means today to have a Grand Knight Champion, what it takes to get there, and also I'm going to kind of back off a little bit here and let you and Mark take the bulk of this, Corey. But, you know, just let's just try to peel back all the layers of the onion that we can tonight, and give people that may aspire to finish a dog into Grand Knight Champion the information they need.
Well, I was really happy to see that Mark brought a notebook with him tonight. I heard that he was doing his homework, getting ready for this interview, and I'm going to grill him with questions. So I appreciate you letting me take a swing at him, Steve, even though we're going to be talking about your dog and the partnership that Mark has with your dog, but I'm looking forward to it. I mean, it's a good scope for anybody, like you said, that's looking to compete with a dog on any type of level. It helps us understand some of the financial costs that can go into something like this and the commitment that it takes. And even more so with a partnership where, you know, communicative barriers and other things like that need to be overcome. So we're really happy to have you here, Mark. So, but I think that's a good place for us to start. So, Mark, what does it mean to you to have a dog finished a Grand Knight Champion? Why don't we start there and just have you explain to everybody what's so magical about having a dog like Fever and being able to accomplish that goal, that title?
It's just a lot of work and a lot of miles to get to Grand. And when you get it granded, it feels like you've done a milestone with that dog and got it done. I mean, now you can keep going, which I have a Walker dog that's still running. He's working on Grand 3, but I've passed the reins off to somebody else to do that, finish that for me while I've been doing Fever. It's a long road, and it's very satisfying to me to get there with this dog. It's a new breed for me to work with.
It's a long road in the respect that Fever particularly holds multiple titles with the United Kennel Club and some other registries that put on competitive events for coonhounds. So let's talk about that. I mean, obviously it is somewhat difficult to make Grand Knight Champion, and there's a lot of effort and a lot of sweat that goes into that. But you, from what I've seen on social media and following this dog over the amount of time that you guys have been campaigning him a little bit, he holds multiple titles. So what air of complexity did that add to the equation as far as the amount of time and effort you had to put in to get this dog where he's at?
this dog's special to me because he's holding field titles that I've never had. He's holding water titles I've never had on a dog. Basically, I was just exercising him, and I got a pond close by, and I got a walker dog that does pretty good catching and retrieving, and he was like out swimming everything I had at like 7 months old. So I was like, this dog's fast, and you could tell when he's in the water behind him, he had his head down and really striving to pass him. So then I knew he had a competitive edge. He wanted to get that float and get it back to me, or take it out of another dog's mouth. He was that competitive just to get it back to me. So I knew he had to drive, and just watching him swim in them lakes and stuff, I just started going, and he took off. His very first swim race was Spartanburg, 7:30 of 2002 or 2022, and he lost that day. That was his very first swim race, but that was his very first time competing and seeing being put in a box and dropped out right on a deck, and that was his very first time out. His next time was he went to state championship and won a round. His very next. The next week, and the state champion beat him by about six inches, and he was he was 9 months old, and he raced for the state championship.
So I guess that's a good point to bring up real quick, not to interrupt you, Mark, but you guys started this journey with Fever while he was relatively young, and that's what makes this accomplishment more special to you and Steve to a certain degree, I believe. So 9 months old is when you guys started this journey, or was it kind of a combination?
June the 3rd of 22, he was at his very first bench show. So he was 8 months old when he started his journey. And he got a best of show that day. His very first show was a best of show when he's 8 months old.
And what age did you guys start competition hunting him specifically?
Started competition hunting. He hunted same year, August the 9th. So he was 11 months old. Oh, yeah, that's 10 months old, ain't Steve? August.
He was born in October, so. Yeah, August would make him 10 months old. Right.
Okay, but it was before his birthday. So 9 months old, he got a cast win with 200 plus. The next night, he got a cast win in Statesville with 225 plus. And that was a start when he turned 10 months old. He got a cast win at Wilkesboro. And that was three wins at 10 months old.
So, obviously, you guys are finishing him out in these competitive events at a very young age for a hound. So, there uh-huh. must have been something methodical behind that, I would imagine. And this might be a question for both of you at the same time. But what was the intent behind starting him in competitive events at such a young age? Because, you know, that's something that a lot of us hound hunters talk about to a great extent, is how early is too early, how old is too old, you know, and it doesn't really matter if we're talking about training just for hunting purposes or if we're talking about for competitive events. I'd be interested to hear both of your takes on why he was so young when he started, what kind of gave you the idea that he would be good to start at this age in competitive events, and how do you think that has played into his success?
You want to take that, Mark?
I'll take that. I started hunting him like with a hound at probably 6 months old. I took him by himself when he was in the daylight, when he was about 5 or 6 months old when I got him. And then I transitioned him to the dark. And this one night I carried him with my older dog, and I thought, well, my old dog treed, went to him. I said, that puppy's up there across the mountain. I said, I reckon we better walk to him. He must be hung up or lost. And when we got up, going up the mountain, you could hear him. He was treed at 7 months old. And I was like, okay, we got something going on here. He split treed at 7 months old, and it was like that from then on. He was just doing his own thing. He didn't care the one dog was a locked down treat. He didn't care. He just went on and would split tree and have coons. So I was like, he's kind of special. It's just crazy how he took off like that.
You know, Corey, I noticed that in Mark's communications with me, and I'll interject right here. I think for a partnership like this to work, especially when one is kind of like a silent partner, as I am, because, you know, some partnerships, I guess guys, one of the partners will take the dog and hunt it for a while, and the other one will take it for a while, or maybe they hunt together all the time. Well, in this case, it's been entirely different. Fever has been with Mark 100% of the time, except for a week that I took him out to White River this year, or this past fall. So, you know, Mark has been awesome to give me feedback, send me videos, tell me what the dog's doing, the good, the bad, the ugly. And, you know, it didn't take me very long. There's a little funny story. I'll tell it real quick. The way Mark and I got together is I had this pup coming from Bill Scheninger up in Ohio, and Bill has the Saddle Up Lazarus dog. That's his stud dog. Lazarus had won Plot Days the year before and made quite a name for himself as a competition dog. And I had a female, long story short, Bill and I transferred the ownership of Dancer over to him when our good friend Tony Beals got sick. And anyway, Bill and I discussed breeding. And sure enough, we did breed a Dancer to the Lazarus. The puppies were born, and I think it was like at 12 days old, Mark. I believe it was something like that, when Dancer died. Mm-hmm. Her stomach twisted. It was very traumatic. And but anyway, Bill, being the great fellow that he is, told me, he said, well, Steve, I've got one of these puppies for you. And he said, you just leave it here as long as you want. You can get it when you want. And he sent me pictures, and there were a couple dark brindles there. And I picked the one out of a picture. And I said, now you've done it, Fielder. What are you going to do with this pup? You know, you're down here in Florida where alligators and crocodiles and Burmese pythons and every other kind of thing that wants to either eat me or my pup. You know, what are you going to do with this pup? And I just kind of on a whim posted it on Facebook, and I said, I've got this well-bred pup. I'm looking for a partner. And if I find the right one, the pup will belong to you as much as it does me. And and I was being my normal wise self here, and I said, if you take this pup and make a name for him, I'll tell the world about it. But if you don't give him a chance and you don't do right by him, I'll tell him that too. Well, Mark contacted me through he was referred to me by a couple people. Courtney Risk is a mutual friend. Keith Emery and Andy Emery are mutual friends. And that's how Mark and I got together on Fever. But since that time, you know, Mark has given me tremendous amount of feedback on Fever. And I could see, just like Mark said, from a very early age, man, the reason, I guess, Mark, you can agree or disagree, I don't think we really intended to get him into the mainstream as early as we did. But he just kind of jumped in on his own, didn't he?
He just jumped in on his own. He was like he's a fireball.
Yeah.
He's a
I would say that entering the competition stage at that age for any dog, that's a big chore for any dog to undertake, especially at that age, and especially in this particular breed, talking about the plot hounds. I would tend to think that anyways, being fairly new to the breed myself. What do you have to say about that, Mark? Being new to the plot breed, which is my understanding that you are new to the plot breed, you know, Fever being your first. How do they compare? What are we looking at as far as staunch differences or glaring similarities between the other breeds?
Well, let's go ahead and say Fever's different. I was expecting about a year to 2 year old getting him trained. I wasn't expecting 7-8 months and him training his own coon and getting on with it pretty hard. That's the only difference in this dog. He's just that dog, a special dog, I think. But I've had walkers. Usually I hit the hunts with the walker dogs at 1 year old. I had them. I like had the Dreamer dog I had. I've done very well with. I think he was the same way. He was like 7-8 months old, and we were hunting grand nights with him, and he crossed about a 4-foot woven wire fence, smoked everything we had, and was in there treating. Had two coons, and everybody else was just walking around. I was like, me and Jason Seal was hunting that night, and when we got to the tree, we both looked at each other, and we're like, something's up. We got one here, and he was something, too. So he done a lot for me anyway, and this dog's just, he's about like him. He's just took off wide open right out of the gate and ain't looked back. Yeah.
Well, that's pretty awesome to hear. So, obviously, any time that we choose to campaign a dog that we feel is very worthy of competing, whether it be on a local level or a national level or what have you, obviously, there's a lot of expense that goes into that. And that's kind of what I want to touch on next, is some of the specifics about What does a partnership on a coonhound look like? What are the responsibilities of each of the people that are involved in their different aspects? And, you know, what does it take a partnership to finish a dog out to Grand Night Champion or to campaign a dog to multiple titles? What do you guys have to say about that?
It don't take a partnership to do all that. But it helps when you got somebody good to fall in there with you and get it done. And or, you know, like Steve, he's a great promoter and been right there with him. Anytime I wanted to go somewhere, he never said don't or hold back. Or mainly he was like, go on. And I'm like, I'm getting old, but I need to slow down.
Oh, well, no market. Oh, go ahead, Corey.
Well, I was just gonna comment that you have to have somebody there to enjoy the success with, and if you have somebody that you're friends with who is a good supporter of you in whatever role you play in the partnership, I think that's great.
Oh yeah, it was cool. We had a good run. We ain't done yet, but. We've had fun.
Well, you know, I want to jump in there just a minute on that. This is the first actual partnership that I've had on a dog. Down through the years, my dad and I owned our dogs together. But when you're family, you know, what's one is the other's. And sometimes, like when I was with UKC, because of their requirements, that the dogs, you know, that I myself as a UKC employee could not actually hunt in the hunt. So if we had a nice dog, you know, at times I've transferred dogs like the Bronco dog I had, into my dad's name. And then the dog was able to hunt, you know, with a handler or whatever. But so this, the partnership issue, most people will tell you it's very difficult to make a partnership work, simply because we all have our own ideas about things. All you got to do is get on a Facebook message or, you know, Facebook thread and look at all the different opinions on any given topic, and everybody has a different idea. And the one thing, you know, Mark and I probably haven't agreed 100% on everything, but we've certainly never had anything that was worth discussing between us that we disagreed on. You know, there might have been a little trivial things here and there, and he probably got tired some nights, the old man texting him when he's wore out or trying to handle his dog. But, you know, our partnership has worked extremely well, and I think it's a blessing, Mar. I'll tell him here without embarrassing him. He's been a blessing to me and to Ella. Ella was as happy as I was Saturday night when we found out that fever had finished. I mean, we both had a little party here, you know. It was a great time. And, you know, so I would caution anybody that, you know, thinks about a partnership on a coon dog to seek out your partners very well and make sure that you're on the same track and make sure, because really, if you've got a nice young dog, you want that dog to be all it can be. And if I'm sitting down here with all these ideas and Mark's up there at the end of the leash, and he's seeing what the dog's actually doing and what the dog needs, he doesn't need me down here, you know, guessing about what he needs, you know. And that's the way our partnership has worked, you know. If Mark is the man, he's the one that makes all the decisions on this dog, you know, about where he wants to take him hunting and when and when it's time to stay home. And I will say this about Mark. I noticed this very early on, buddy, that you have a lot of competition sense, a lot of know-how, a lot of savvy, so to speak. And one of the things we were talking about early on was about the decision to hunt this dog in hunts when he was young. And I have Mark, or we have Mark's know-how, or whatever you want to call it, to thank for knowing sometimes when the entry just looked a little questionable as far as getting the young dog in a bad situation on the cast or something, just leave him in the truck and not hunt him that night. Or, you know, and I know we did have one incident where the dog got roughed up some. And, of course, you don't want that in a young dog. You don't want that to happen to a young dog. So Mark's, call it intuition, call it skill, know-how, whatever it is, but he knows how to navigate the perilous waters of this night hunt game, especially when you're hunting a young dog, you know. And I really thank him for having that wisdom. A lot of times when I'd say, oh, man, we did, you know, we wanted to finish fever to a night champion, didn't we, Mark, before he's a year old. That was kind of a goal.
Oh, yeah.
Once he got those three wins, we got greedy. We said, man, we can go for it. Well, but Mark wisely, you know, kind of at times backed off and said, no, not tonight.
Yeah. You know? Well, I'm going to give Mark a compliment, too. And not because this, you know, we're trying to pump his brakes here on the podcast or anything like that, but I'm looking at him on the screen here as we're talking. And Mark, you got a great beard, man. I just got to say that and get that out of the way. I've seen so many wind pictures from so many different dog events over the past couple weeks, and it seems like a lot of the guys that are winning at major events have a nice beard like yours. So that I'm starting to think that that's part of the equation.
Could be
here.
It.
So it's
not. It worked. We ain't got
it worked for Phil Robertson. Look at him, you know, Willie and Jace and And ZZ Top, who can argue with that, you know?
Yeah, we ain't got time to shave. Yeah. We got to be in the woods.
Well, you might not be aerodynamic, but, you know, you've obviously done your fair share of winning, so I congratulate you for that. So, talking about winning specifically, obviously, on any journey on finishing a dog out to Grand Night Champion, there's one particular event that sticks out in that dog's quest for greatness. So, let's hear from Mark about probably the most memorable moment from a hunt specifically for Fever in finishing him out to Grand Night Champion. And then my part two to that question is, what was the moment in the final cast that finished him to Grand Night that secured the win for him?
Let's start with the number two question. The guy treeing too quick on me and taking 125 minus, I knew it was over then, because I knew Fever was going to get treed. He's highly accurate. If he locks down, as long as he ain't balling. If he's balling, you better hold up. But when he locks down hard, he's cooning that tree or your den trees, something's getting
stored. Now, when you say balling, you mean when he's locating and he's just not sure where he wants to sit down and park it?
If he keeps on balling, like three, just he ball and then it falls and then another one and pause, and I better hold off. Because when he's sure, he's freaking treeing contest winner in the woods. He locks down, it's on, and I know. And when that guy treated his dog too quick, because Fever was still going, I could see him on the Garmin, and he was still moving, and that guy treated his dog on a whim, I was like,
so he's it almost sounds to me like, I don't know who this person was, but it almost sounds like they may have hunted with Fever a time or two prior.
Oh yeah, they're
that'll bite you every time.
But because he runs with a chop, sure, and that messes a lot of people up. He's chop mouth when it's hot. He's running with a chop, and that messes a lot of people up because he's a fast chop on the ground if it's hot. And he got excited and pulled the trigger too soon, and they kept going. And he minused his dog, and I was like, okay. Just lay back, just wait now, because he's done 125 minus, and we're on a 1 hour hunt, so it's going to be hard game now. He located, I took the first tree from him, went to blowing it out, went right in there, coon, and I knew it was over there.
Oh, that's awesome.
And we done another one, and he circled back. In the silent mode, went right back, ended up back at I could see the truck when he treed when we got there, and that was number two, and that was the game, and just put him on dog lead straight to the truck and went back. Well, so it was a quick one.
Well, that's
one
an out. Added bonus if you were right by the truck. My gosh.
Truck, I was like, heck yeah, right there's a truck.
Not only did you finish him out, but you didn't have to walk forever to get back to the truck. Usually, if you were finishing a dog out, you were walking.
Well, I paid my dues at APA days walking. I never are. Oof.
Well, I don't want to interrupt Mark's second part. I think that was a two-part question you gave him there. But he mentioned APA days, which was just a couple weeks ago, and I didn't get to go this year. But, you know, we always start out with great expectations, you know, and you're going to go up there and hunt three nights. And we needed three wins on Fever to finish him. And it brought back a story in my experience years ago. Well, before I go there, Fever did get a win. And really got got to hunt with some good dogs on Thursday night, and ended up with the cast win, you know. So that was one. So what a way to start, you know. But as it worked out, that's all we got at breed days was the one win. I said, well, darn, you know. And then, of course, Mark, he doesn't always tell me everything. Sometimes he'd make a great poker player, I tell you what. maybe that's what you're doing with all that money. But anyway, it reminded me real quickly back when I had the old Bronco dog, and I had two first place wins on him. And going to plot days at Florida, Illinois. Hopeful, man, I'm going to finish him at plot days. Here we come, man. I went out there and hunted three nights and didn't get a sniff, man. I didn't win a cast. And I drove that 600 miles back to West Virginia, and I was not happy. Ooh. And went the very next weekend and finished him over in Ballard, West Virginia. So that's just the way things work out. But no, so we came away from breed days. Mark may want to talk about that, but had a great, great showing at breed days. Just the one cast win, but did a bunch of other stuff down there. And keeps winning all this dog
food, real,
you know, which that helps. But anyway, that was that just reminded me when we went to breed days and didn't get it done, and then come back and out of the blue, he kind of slipped the Friday night cast went in on me. I didn't even realize he was hunting Friday night, and then he had the big time on Saturday night. So
Mark, do you have a favorite moment from Fever's journey from zero to Grand Night champion, that just a moment that really sticks out to you as far as winning a particular hunt or just a particular performance he put on?
My favorite particular performance, we lost that night, but I drawed a really nice walker dog. Big, he won a lot. Drawed him. Drawed a local guy in RQE. And in a two-hour hunt, Fever put up 600 plus, no minus. But we split treed. Fever is on a big tree. The coon was in another tree, but the limb laid right over top of Fever's head. And the other dog was on the other tree, and he got to score the coon, and I did not. But I was on a big tree with a hole, and they did circle my tree that night, but that costed me the RQE that night. But I was proud of him. He did 600 plus. He was winding the coon. He was directly under it, but he had his feet on that tree, and I didn't get to score the coon. And if I would have got to score the coon, I'd have won that RQE, high-scoring dog and all. But
yeah, that's a tough break to take, especially at an RQE.
But in a two-hour hunt, we scored five on five coons, and Fever was the one digging them up. And he laying it on him, but that 225 that dog took, and I didn't take nothing. That ended it for me right there. Great. I mean, he got it that time. I fought all night. We got to the last drop. I took a second strike, went in there. Dog split up. You could see him in the mountain going different directions. You could hear him. And Fever pulled up on the hill and started treeing. And the other guy handling the dog that beat me, he's a good buddy of mine. And I said, do you think your dog's going to cover him? He said, I don't think so. And I said, well, I'm going to take it. I treed Fever, and then the very next bark was that dog. He was there. And he loaded up, too. And I was like, I'll see anyway, but went in there and had another coon. I'd say Fever treed that coon for that dog. To get him, he had quite a score right now. But
wow,
if I hadn't lost the 225 to him, a circle and a plus, I would have probably won that cast.
Well, yeah,
That one hurt. But he looked phenomenal.
The ones that hurt are always the most memorable, unfortunately.
That hurt.
Well, and that kind of brings me to another point that I think should be made in regards to Fever and your guys' success with them is a lot of that plays into his breeding. So that's one thing that I wanted to talk about with you guys is a little bit about his breeding, a little bit about Lazarus specifically. We've already mentioned Lazarus and then the female that Steve had. Steve, what was her name again? I think you're on mute, Steve.
Yeah, there. It's amazing when you unmute the mic how much better it sounds.
We actually muted him so Mark could talk. So.
That's right. They keep doing this motion with their finger across their throat.
Yeah,
I haven't figured out what that means yet. But no, the female I called her Dancer.
Dancer.
And I can't think about that little plop female without getting a big old smile and almost a tear in my eye when I think about her, because she was out of a litter of six beautiful puppies. I mean, I had borrowed a female from Amanda Alexander that had the great Black Monday was her sire. And excuse me just a second, guys. And I'd raised a litter out of the Hoss dog that I had. People remember me talking about old Hoss. And he and I drove all over the country together. Probably, best I can tell, around 200,000 miles we rode together. But anyway, I raised that litter of puppies, and they were all beautiful puppies. And Ella told me, she said, I don't care which pup you keep, but don't keep that one. She's crazy. And I said, well, what, you know, but I knew what she meant. She was into everything. She was the first one out of the whelping box, put her in an exercise pen outside, and she'd climb right over the top of it. I have a big camphor tree out in the yard, and she'd take a run and jump up about 10 feet. I'm not kidding. It's probably 10 feet up to this big fork. And she'd just stand up there and look around like, you know. I mean, she had boundless energy. So, you know, I always remember Dancer. She was a dog that never really got to be all that she could be. She did make water champion and show champion and raised some good puppies, crossbred puppies to a cur dog that Tony Beals had before Bill bred her to Lazarus. But that was basically Fever's mother there.
Well, so obviously Lazarus plays a big part into it, just like Dancer does. And we'll talk about Lazarus a little bit here, but I want to flesh out some of the information with Dancer more thoroughly. So obviously, Steve, Dancer was out of your Hoss dog, like you just told us. Mm-hmm. So how far back does, in Fever's pedigree, do your own personal dogs go back through Dancer? I want to know where the first bear pen plot dog comes into the equation.
Well, actually, the old dogs that my dad and I raised for years are not there.
Okay.
Hoss was a gift to me from Kevin Lundholm in Ohio, an attorney there who worked very closely with the MPHA for several years. Kevin had a female named Sweet Melody that was awesome. She was a littermate sister to Johnny Hager's Solid Oak dog. Other dogs, they were out of the famed Okie Josie cross, Redwood Okie, Redwood Josie. Josie was out of Sarge 3, Buckeye Sarge 3. Which goes back to Sarge 2 and then to the old Sarge dog that Kurt Seibert and John Otto hunted. But anyway, Hoss was a gift to me. And he had none of the old bear pen blood in him. But Hoss was Dancer's sire, so that makes him Fever's grandsire. So only three generations there, Corey, of the old Bear Pen stock, which was primarily bred to be bear dogs. Those dogs were primarily bear bred hounds, although I did coon hunt them as well and had good success with them with Roper and Wrangler and some of those. But that's on that side. And, of course, it goes back to the Black Monday dog went back to Bayou Jake, which is a famous plot dog, Rex Morgan out in Iowa. So there's a lot of good stuff there on that side. Well, Hoss, a sire, for instance, was Boland's Clyde, a Grand Night champion, Grand Show champion that Les Boland in West Virginia owned, later sold him to Nick Ernie. There's just Hoss's pedigree was full of Grand Night champions. I believe if you milk it down, except for Joe, for Sweet Melody, his mother, who was a night champion, field champion, water champion, she was the only one there that would have prevented Hoss from siring an all grand litter had he made Grand Night himself. But that's the female side.
Sure. Now we need to talk about the male side. We need to talk about Lazarus. So what do we got on Lazarus? What kind of information can you give us on Lazarus?
Well, Lazarus has a really impressive pedigree. He is not a line bred or family bred dog. He has some very famous dogs on his pedigree. He has the Brindle Cowboy Up dog that Scott Rawson owned. And Mark, I believe you got to hunt with Scott on Friday night or Thursday night at APA days, didn't you?
Yes, sir. He went with us to see him go.
Yeah.
And Lazarus. I drove Lazarus Thursday.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we had that was kind of neat when Fever got to hunt against his daddy. Of course, I tell Bill, you know, Fever, if you look at a picture of Fever, he looks like he's chiseled out of a rock because Mark has kept him busy. He's in shape. And of course, Lazarus, how long had it been since Bill had hunted Lazarus, I wonder, you know.
Couple months since he'd
had it. Yeah.
Well, but anyway, what did you think about him, Mark? As a firsthand account of hunting with him, what did you think?
Well, I'll tell you how the cast went. Loctite, the Floyds. We had the Clyde II dog of Charlie. And then we had Lazarus and Phoenix. Out of a one-hour hunt, not one plot dog treed with the other. They split treed all wow. night long. Even my guide out there, he said, that's the most impressive thing I've ever seen out of the plot breed. He said, not one of these dogs treed with the other one all night long. They all split and never was together.
I'd say your guide needed to get out a little bit more, but that's just my opinion.
Well, the first time he's seen Fever, he said, I ain't never seen a plot trick. I said, you ready to see one? He's like, he said, yeah. Well, you know, he was a walker dog. I said, you going to cut them together? What are you going to do? He said, no. He said, I want you to pull that plot out and cut him. I want to see. I said, all right. Pulled him out, cut him. 15 minutes later, we're shooting a coon out to him. I said, there you go.
That was not on the hunt. That was a prior meeting, right? Yeah. No, that would have been a fun hunt for me to be on with those guys. Charlie Boyder from Louisiana, great, great guy and a great plot guy, long-standing plot guy. And then Floyd Ledman, I've known him forever. From Illinois, and Floyd always has a good dog, and is a great guy, and of course Bill, and I had, the only time I've been hunting with Lazarus has been on Clayton Stark's videos, you know, that he did of Lazarus. But
yeah, that was the last tree we shined, was Lazarus at the end of the hunt, and probably all three of us couldn't have reached around it. Giant broke off tree. So it was a good hunt. And Loctite was the same way, big old den at the end. Thiever was across the hillside, still doing his own thing. So he never come into it. It was over. He must have a watch, because when the hour ended and we started gathering dogs, here he come. I was like, yeah, here he is.
He knows. Well, you know, Mark. Oh, go ahead, Corey. And I've got a point I want to make too, but go ahead.
Well, the only thing I was going to add to that was the reason we're asking about Lazarus specifically is Lazarus is obviously Fever's daddy. Or Diddy, however you say that, in West Virginia.
In the but, South. Diddy.
Yeah, yeah.
No, it's not West Virginia. Diddy. It's a Southern thing. A Diddy. Okay.
All right. Well, Lazarus is particularly noteworthy because he's built a little bit of a reputation for himself as being an excellent reproducer in the breed. And we're kind of expecting big things from Lazarus and from Bill as far as the male dogs he's promoting. And when you talk about a breed like the Plot Hounds, there aren't that many studs to choose from. And when you get good ones, they're often celebrated in a big way. So that's kind of why we're talking about Lazarus on this podcast, is because he's the noteworthy dog right now.
Well, go ahead, Mark.
Lazarus, I think he will be on the current reproducer list soon. I truly believe he's going. I've seen several nice dogs out there on his post, people posting what they're doing. I think he'll be there. He just got to get that puppies on the ground.
Well, and that brings up a whole can of worms that we could open. And, you know, the plot, well, first of all, I'd say, you know, you don't get the stud dog, you get what he produces, you know. So when you breed to Lazarus, you're not getting Lazarus. We know he's a coon dog. He won Plot Days, winning his cast 3 nights in a row, impressively won that. He's done other winnings. He is a Grand Night champion. I noticed Bill posted the other day, he's also a water champion now. Maybe that's where Fever's getting a little of his push out there in the water too. But but here goes. I'm going to, you know, they say fools rush in where angels fear to tread. In the plot breed, people want to breed in the backyard. For the most part, and people bring up this question, why aren't the plot dogs doing more winning out there in the major hunts? Why aren't they winning? Now, and I'm quick to answer, well, you do know that a plot won the UKC World Championship, and you do know that another plot won the PKC World Championship. And they say, oh, is that right? You know, because there are some breeds that are still trying to get their first world champion. But for the most part, plot people will not acknowledge the accomplishments of other dogs, and either that could be one reason, or number two, they just don't want trust any other breeding. They want to keep it, you know, close to home, or for whatever reason. But I don't want to go there. I started to say, but I won't. If I knew where there was a dog out of a Grand Night champion, a Plot Days Isaiah Kid winner, and then is producing dogs that are winning, wouldn't I want to go get some of that? Wouldn't I want to go up there to Northwestern Ohio and take my female to saddle up Lazarus and see if I could get a Fever or a Cowboy or whatever else these other pups, other dogs out of him are? Wouldn't I want to try that? I know I would if I was still active in the game. But I think in our breed, that's one of the downfalls to the plot breed, is the guys just won't, they won't. And I think a lot of it has to, I won't say it's envy, but I will say it's an admission that somebody else maybe has something a little better than what I have, and I don't want to admit that. But guys, come on, man. You know, there's other good stud dogs out there producing. The Logan dog of Bill Harrell's has produced a lot of good dogs, you know. You know, there are others. I'm not going to get into all of that. I've probably already made a few enemies.
And to flesh out your point, Steve, everybody wants to know what makes the Treeing Walker Coonhounds more successful. And a big part of that is there's just as much envy and kennel blindness and all that kind of good stuff in the Treeing Walker breed. But I will say those guys are willing to cross those continental divides to breed to good dogs. And they're willing to try new things. And they're willing to make the crosses to see what happens. And that's what really separates them from a lot of the breeds that you're going to see out there on, you know, in these major events. Is it's not just their numbers. It's the fact that they're willing to try new things.
Yeah. A lot of people will go to the next year's world champion, no matter what they got, you know, trying to go breed to the winners. That's what the Walker people are doing. And other people ain't. A couple breeds ain't doing it. That's why they struggle. They want to hang up on their own stuff when they could outcross and probably fix some problems they're having with power. They should go find what they're missing and breed to a dog that's got that.
Sure, that's a great point.
Well, we always call that Nick breeding, you know, breed to strength where you have weakness. And it doesn't always work, but it does work. I just wish, and as I said at the beginning of this podcast, it's not about this little dog of ours. We haven't even put him at stud yet. But it's about, you know, guys will say, endlessly say, I only want to improve the plot breed. I just want to improve the breed. Well, sometimes you got to get out of the backyard to improve. And I've done it. I've done it in the past. And I've, you know, one of the best crosses I ever made was taking a dog to Texas and taking a dog to Illinois over the years and reaching out and buying a dog off the West Coast and different things like that to try to improve what I had. And it was for selfish reasons. I was doing it because I wanted better dogs, you know. So, but, you know, Mark, one thing I noticed, and I think you did too, and maybe you could elaborate on it a little bit, if I'm not taking this away from you, Corey, is that we noticed real quick that Fever was accurate, wasn't he? He wanted to have a tune, wouldn't he, Treat?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He's very dog. That's his big plus. Rarely I walk to a tree, don't have something in it. It's rare.
Well, you know, my buddies out in White River, they don't have much faith in me and my dog. he hasn't done the best out there. This year he took one night. He said, tonight I'm going to show you what a world-class possum dog is.
Oh.
I went on private land nubbing than I did with a guy. And he said he had some coon hunting. He's a great guy, and I appreciate him a lot. But, man, he had more possums than I've ever seen, I think, in my life. And Fever got under some of them, let's just say that. But I think Mark addressed that problem when I got him back home.
We've reworked them.
Well, this is an unpopular opinion, but I would much rather them tree a possum than have nothing.
Yeah.
Gosh.
Well, you know, earlier, Corey, did you want to get onto that? And I think Mark has got the numbers there. You know, those of you who are starting down the road to Grand Night Champion, that's what's in the headlights down there. And you want to reach that or attain that, whether you do it as a 2-year-old or a 5-year-old or whatever. It's not cheap, is it?
It's not cheap. It's a long road, too.
Well, let's talk about that. Let's talk about some. Do you guys have any idea as far as the specific costs that went in to taking Fever to Grand Night Champion? Because I know personally, I have a little plot hound female here that is getting ready to get pushed, and I need to know how much money I need to ask my wife for. So, you know, if you guys can help me out with that, and honey, if you're listening.
I've wrote down every time Fever's went somewhere, every win, every loss, every entry fee. I counted up today. I pulled the book out. Since he's 8 months old, and now we're 2 years and.
No, 2 years and 5 months.
Or 2 years and 5 months. He has been to 117 events.
Now, is that's not just night hunts. That's water races.
Not water races, field trials, yeah. PKCs. I didn't go through and eliminate those. That's PKC hunts, bench shows, everything he's been to. He's been to 117 events. So that's how many he's competed in. But you got to say, this dog is carrying $1,400 in PKC money now. Grand Water Champion, Grand Night Champion, likes 3 wins of being a Grand Show Champion, likes 3 wins of being a Grand Field Champion, leading a PKC plot race right now. But, as far as entry fee monies, best I could come up with was $3,629 in entry fees. $15,255 miles. And, if you do the math on the gas, that's about $3,200 in gas.
Now, on average, you talk about gas, and we know what gas prices are like right now. On average, how far away from your home were you traveling with Fever to compete?
My local clubs are showing 26 to 36 miles time I go and come. You know, go to the club, sign up, come back to Taylorsville Hunt. Go back if I win 26 to 36 miles. The Taylorsville Club is like 2 miles from my house. So that's a real good one. But, you know, Morganton Coon Club, 74 miles here. Lincoln, 78 miles time my round trip. Statesville goes in the high 60s. That's where I've been to Farmington, 128 miles. I've been all the way to Rayford. It's 285.
Now, as far as national events that Fever's competed in, so we know that he was at APA Days this year. Now, was there how many other events on a national level did he compete in during that time? Well, I just mean in, as a whole.
In addition to APA Days?
He's competing in OTC.
TOC.
TOC. Tournament of Champions. Sorry. Okay.
He's been to Orangeburg twice, the Grand American. He's been to...
Autumn Oaks.
Autumn Oaks.
Been I would assume that has he been to NPHA days, the National Plot Hound Association days?
No.
He has not.
Okay. He has not.
That's been out. Last year it was in Flora, I believe, Illinois, which that's a 600-700 mile trip for Mark and one way. Sure. And then this year it's going to be out there again. Now, he did qualify for the TOC last year. And you went down to Georgia, I believe, didn't you, Mark?
Year before.
Now, last year, we didn't get the mandatory 5 cast wins.
We had 4 wins. I had 4 wins on him. I had 4 wins on Dixie and 1 win on Crockett. So I didn't get nothing finished into that. So.
I think the point to be made here, Corey, is for guys that aspire to do this, it's not easy. It's not instant. You don't win every time you go. You got to factor all that in. And if you're only going to win and you're going to have a bad time and you're going to count every penny and you're going to begrudge what you had to spend and all, don't do it. You know, do something else. You can go out and pay $60, $70 green fee to play a round of golf or something like that and won't get near as dirty and or as sleepy. As I started to mention earlier, a lot of these videos that Mark sends me is as he's almost to the tree, and it sounds like one of those steam engines back there in the hills of West Virginia pulling a log train up the by the time he's getting back on top, because where Fever plays, it's not the White River. it's not level.
Steve don't get live bit footage because there ain't no service back there.
that's pretty much it. But anyway, my point being is that if you love coon hunting, it's all, you know, goals. Set yourself a goal. Don't set Grand Night Champion as your initial goal. Maybe like Fever did, set show champion. Become a show champion. Or run in the field trials if your club holds them, or in your water race, or anything that you can make progress as you go along. But, you know, you it's like they say eating an elephant, you know. You do it one bite at a time.
Oh, geez. Well, so did we ever come up with a final dollar figure? To the best of your knowledge, as far as what the grand total for a Grand Night champion costs.
I don't know. I know in the last year on my end, which is only half, we ought to explain, I guess, if you're thinking about a partnership, and Mark and I guess do it about as easy as you can. Mark, and you correct me if I'm wrong, you keep track of the entry fees. You keep track of the miles divided by the gas mileage on your truck. We keep track of the vet bills, and we keep track of the dog food. That's basically it, isn't it? And I think from my standpoint, just in the last probably 12 months, it was over $6,000. Just my, you know, or maybe that was your the total amount maybe was about 6,000 for that total.
Probably $7,000, not counting the miles, not counting I blowed up my little truck. So my little hunting truck's broke now, not counting the expense of that.
I guess I'm going to have to pay for that,
too. I was going to say, it sounds like Mark's dropping hints over here.
Hey, let me make it clear. I don't pay for everything. Hey, it's a 50-50 deal.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I know. I wore my little truck out. It broke, but I do bear hunt.
Steve's half of that truck is the bed.
Yeah. So, Steve, I'm kind of leaning towards a 24 full-size four door, maybe.
Ooh. Reaching high. Hey, no more rice. No more rice burners for you?
No more rice burners. We're going full-size.
You just take your... You just take your royalty check from being on the podcast and get your down payment.
Hey guys, Corey, is there anything you think that we've missed? In terms of information that we can give to people out there that's starting out on this road. Mark, do you see anything particular that people ought to be concerned about or think about, or just overall your philosophy of this whole thing, man? I know you've made those walker dogs, and like you say, the dog you got now is well on his way to be a Grand Knight 3, if he isn't already. So you know the pardon.
No, he ain't there yet. My best suggestion is, if you can't have a good time, don't do it. If it makes you mad, quit. Do something else, like you said. You'll have more fun if you're doing it for fun and don't get dead serious. And if you got to get crazy with people, just leave. I mean, I've had them casts where it was like, that is the worst hunt I've ever been on my life. Somebody acting like that, and now that I'm the old man on the cast now, I'm like, hey, you want to act like that, we can all get barred right quick. So I'm not playing the game with you. I'm done playing the game. I'm here for a good time, not a long time.
Truer words have never been said.
Yeah. Well, Mark, without embarrassing you, how old are you now?
I'll be 56.
Yeah, double nickels.
Here, August.
So, young guys.
I'll be accepting.
Right, 25-year-olds out there listening to us, 35-year-olds. Hey, you got 20, 30 more years to enjoy this. And I know Mark's not done yet. We still got another place to play over there with the PKC boys. And that's always a fun game. But it's
fun here because I play with some heavy hitters here in North Carolina. But they know when we get together, we'll have a good time. They don't try me as playing hardball. They're always nice. I know when they go other places, it ain't the same people. But we usually have a good time. I hunt against some top-notch national dogs here, so
yeah,
we have a good time when we get together. And they do fear him when they draw him because they know it can happen just as well as the Sticks dogs. I'll drop her name, drop her. That is the most dangerous walker dog I've ever seen. When you don't think nothing's happening and you're like, where's Sticks at? She's right over there. You'll be like, boom, she's treating us like, oh no, sure enough, she's deadly too. So she's very a dangerous dog to deal with.
You remind me of the story my friend Johnny Brinkley in Florida down here, his longtime friend Roosevelt Williams, and I met Roosevelt for the first time at Johnny's anniversary, his birthday party, and he and his wife's anniversary last summer. And we were talking, and Roosevelt lives up in Georgia now. What a fine gentleman. And he's a friend on Facebook, and I see his posts quite often. But Johnny told me, he said he was hunting with Roosevelt, and Roosevelt had an English dog, a female. And Johnny said, Roosevelt, I believe she's a little quiet on the ground, isn't she? And Roosevelt looked at him and said, yes, sir, Mr. Johnny, that's when she's most dangerous.
I know my wife's pretty dangerous when she's quiet too. So
yeah. Well, guys, we just about shined this tree, haven't we?
I'd say so.
No.
Circle it up and let's move on.
One hour and 12 minutes. What's burning in your soul, Corey? We let these people go.
I want to hear. Well, first off, I want to congratulate you both. I think that what you're doing with Fever is commendable. I think that more people need to be out there promoting the plot breed the way that you guys have. I think you both are excellent representation for this breed. So thank you for doing that for the breed. You know, Mark, I do, you know, I got one more burning question for you. When's the next plot hound coming along is what I want to know.
My honest opinion on that is my next plot hound will be off Fever. I will not. I have a nice female out crawls. I'm not going behind the barn. Whoever's got a nice hound and wants to breed a Fever, and if I can get one like I want, that'll be the next one. And after that, I won't be going shopping. I'll tell you that. Fever dog. And I listened to your last podcast when Fielder talking about the black and tan.
Yeah.
That barked all the time. Yeah. Let me just play it. You wouldn't like Fever.
Well, that's an honest answer from an honest man.
He's rowdy. He's a 2 year old. He's still young. He's calming down. I can let him out, and he's got his own little running area with the other. There's just a female in there with him now, a walker, one of my walkers, and they'll play a little bit, and I can go out there and look. He'll be laying in the sun sunning, but he does get a little barky at night, but that's when I feed him and put him up. He won't bark for a little bit, but then when he quits, that's it. You won't hear him till the next night. But he is a little barky.
The biggest mistake I've made with my young plot female thus far has been letting her tree squirrels. And not because it's affecting her hunting in any way, but man, we got a load of squirrels in this neighborhood. And I'll tell you what, if one gets close enough to the kennel, she lets you know. Thank God I got good neighbors. That's all I got to say.
All right.
Well, you know, we like dogs that are free tonguers, or I do. You know, I like a dog that gets its mouth open. I don't want it at 2 o'clock in the morning when I'm trying to sleep, you know. But thanks to those, conveniences that we have, you know, you've got the cure right there at your bed on your nightstand if you need it. But one thing about Fever, and I've always noticed about the dog, and I'm kind of a student of dogs. When I'm around them, I like to look them in the eye. I like to see if there's anything home there. You know, the light may be on, but they may be absentee. He's a smart guy, and he's a loving dog. And Mark said the other day, I think at the hunt, he was climbing up on everybody and all as they were petting him, you know, after he finished out. But those are just some of the things that I like about dogs and I like about this breed. They are good companion dogs as well. But, man, if there's something, if there's a game to be played or there's game,
game involved, to play with,
they're going to go. And but anyway, he's just been a great guy. I think we've lost Mark here momentarily. But if I'm done, Corey, but if you have more that you want to explore, let's go for it.
No, I think we're ready for the next podcast. So I think we ought to just sign it off and leave it there for the night.
Well, yeah, and you know, there's been some announcements made through. There's Mark's back. He's back. What? Oh, I thought you had to go tell Fever to shut up. We're about ready to wrap this up, Bud Rowe. Is there anything that we didn't say that you thought we would, or something we need to cover?
No, I'm good.
Well, I did want to say real briefly on the podcast front, there's been a few changes at W Hunting Supply. We are still there. This podcast will still be on the Houndcast DU Supply platform. We're also anywhere that you can get podcasts. Just go on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever and Google Gone to the Dogs and you'll find us. And we just now also have gotten picked up by the Sportsman's Empire network and in what they're calling their Hound Dog Podcasts, I believe. And you can find us on there as well. So no excuse if you can put up with this old gravelly voice and this young whippersnapper here coming at you every week. We'll try to bring good guests on. We especially appreciate Mark coming on with us tonight, buddy. And it's been great to talk about you and your dog. And I say your dog because everything that Fever's done or accomplished has been 100% due to your dedication and your skills and ability. And I appreciate it so much, but I'm just along for the ride, you know.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Appreciate all the kind words, but hopefully we'll talk again and we'll talk about him being quad-grammed soon.
Yeah, that's the next target, isn't it? We got two down, two to go. And then, you know, you might want to, if you get that new Ford, it won't be a Ford if you buy it. I know. You might get that new pickup, and we'll have to go after that silver champion.
I've thought about that myself. I have thought about the silver. I don't know how many plots are silver, but I might want one too.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you got to want it, that's for sure. And I don't know anybody that's has exemplified that any more than you, buddy. Well, Corey, I'm going to go to the barn. What about you?
I got to go there, too. I got to go feed dogs and get things squared away for the night, and then this old boy's going to bed.
Yeah, sounds like a winner. Well, Mark, good to see you. Usually I talk to you, I don't get to see you, but I sure appreciate that FaceTime call Saturday night. I think that might have been my fault, but, man, I was glad to see you. We had a little party around up in here, I'm telling you. So, yeah. But anyway, folks, that's going to shine the tree for tonight on the Gone to the Dogs podcast. Steve Fielder speaking, along with Corey Groover, with Mark Miller. And if anybody asks you, where are those boys? What are they up to? Just tell them, well, they're out there trying to chase that black dog around the woods. I guess they've gone to the dogs. Good night, boys.
See you, folks.